You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up later, we talk with a guest who argues that the members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court should be allowed to pick their own Chief Justice.
But first, we take a look at the history of Boxing Day, a holiday that many of us see on the calendar year after year, but maybe can't explain it or know what we're supposed to do.
Luckily, we have Canadian historian and author Judith Flanders here to help us out. She is the author of The Invention of Murder and Inside the Victorian Home. Her opinion piece, Boxing Day is Forgiving, appeared in the New York Times. Judith, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to start out with the basics here because we have three people in the studio here. And during the break, we were talking about what we thought Boxing Day was. And not surprisingly, we came up with three different descriptions that none of us were, our voice kind of meandered off after the first.
And what were they?
Well, one of our colleagues in the studio actually lived in England for a time. And she says people there told her that it was when the wealthy people received box lunches.
Okay, bad, no.
Bad, no. Another one was that another person in the studio referred back to that episode on MASH where the people switched jobs for the day after. So Colonel Potter was doing Klinger's job and that sort of thing.
Okay, next.
Okay. My theory is something to do with gifts of some kind. And I'm not sure where the box reference comes from, though.
Okay, you're closest.
Yay, good for me.
Yay. Boxing Day is officially the first working day after Christmas, but basically it's the 26th as far as we're all concerned. And when Christmas began to be an important holiday, which was in the 19th century, in the Victorian period, Boxing Day was the day afterwards when the service people, either the servants in the house or the tradesmen, were tipped by the richer people, and they were given Christmas boxes. Now, these weren't real boxes for the most part. It was money. But it was simply a way of referring to a gift.
So how did the meaning of it get so, or is it as lost in other parts of the world as it is here? And America is just sort of floating out all by itself, not knowing what's going on.
Well, different places have different things. I mean, even in Ireland, it's not called Boxing
Day.
It's St. Stephen's Day. But there is still a connection because St. Stephen was, he's the one in, you know, the Carol Good King Wenceslas looked out on the Feast of Stephen, so the day after Christmas. And he saw the reason it's connected with St. Stephen is Stephen was connected with giving and with charity. So even then, the link is always to giving in some way. Now, that is completely vanished in terms of how we actually celebrate the day today. Basically, it's the equivalent here of, I'm sorry, I can't quite remember what you call it there, Black Friday?
Yes, Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Black Friday. Everyone goes to the sales, which is not a hugely charitable endeavor. That's really all people do on Boxing Day, or they go and visit the relatives that they didn't see on Christmas Day.
So when did that start to change? When did that idea of giving to either those who worked for you or those less fortunate change into something, you know, the stores are giving me a deal, so I guess I'll go take advantage of it?
Well, I think that we've kept the giving has translated slightly into what I think you do in the States as well. You know, you give your service people, whether it's sanitation workers or whatever, a Christmas tip. Anyway, we just now do it before Christmas for the most part.
So
in the run-up.
Go ahead.
So the idea is still there in that sense. The charitable idea exists, although it's now more about the season as a whole. I mean, lots of charities here run Christmas appeals, and I'm sure the same is true there.
So the idea is there. So, but in reality, it's a shopping day. So in America, there's the day after Thanksgiving, there's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth about, you know, we've lost track of what Thanksgiving is for, and this consumerism is running rampant. Are there similar discussions that take place in other parts of the world in boxing?
There are, but of course, the great joy of being a historian is finding out the patterns. And the earliest reference I've seen to a newspaper weeping and wailing about Christmas becoming commercialized and we've lost the true meaning was, I think, 1840.
Okay. So at least we've got a history of losing.
I'm quite sure the shepherds at the Nativity were going, well, in my day, it was much less commercial.
No doubt. So one of the questions I have is, so, you know, there's a lot of British origins in the U.S. Why didn't that Boxing Day tradition, we could always use an extra day of shopping, I guess, why didn't that Boxing Day tradition make it across the pond over here?
I think probably because it developed rather later. Certainly the earlier tradition Christmas is basically a 19th century invention. The Anglo-American Christmas is 19th century. There's very little that comes from before that. The Puritans weren't very keen on Christmas. So the American tradition for a long time followed that. And I think that the difference between Boxing Day now and then, perhaps, is that for the early part of the 19th century, when Christmas began to develop, presents weren't a big thing. Gifts were not a major component of Christmas. Children got a little something. But basically, the gifts were hierarchical. Parents gave them to children, richer people gave them to poorer people. They weren't something that you gave to equals, and they weren't very big or important. So when the servants, as they did, of course, worked all of Christmas Day, they would get on the next day a little something from the people they worked for. But the people they worked for didn't have a big present tradition amongst themselves. So I think maybe when presents became a bigger thing, Boxing Day seemed to diminish in importance.
It's interesting, though, that the name still remains, and that even though it seems to have diminished in importance as a holiday itself, and now it's just a shopping holiday, as you say, that name is still there, and it still means something to somebody, I guess.
I think it does, but the English are very good on traditions and very good on sort of keeping names of things that you actually don't even really know what they mean anymore. it's sort of, you know, that there are so many layers of history. And it's just sort of part of daily life. We don't really think about it. Why is it called that?
So if you go back, can you tell me maybe some of the variations? We talked a little bit about, you know, some of the smallish gifts, usually money, that were exchanged. But were there things like the MASH episode we talked about where people switched jobs or anything like
that? Well, that's interesting. Because that comes from the much older tradition of the winter season. I mean, originally, of course, the Roman Saturnalia, where, you know, the fool becomes the king of mm-hmm. the season and so on. For a long time here, Twelfth Night, Epiphany on the 6th of January, was the big holiday. And they had the tradition then. There were a lot of, it was a much rougher holiday. And there was the tradition of the king and the queen of Twelfth Night. And you had it by, you had a Twelfth Night cake, and they had little tokens baked into them. And whoever got the slice with the token was the king or the queen. that gradually shifted as Christmas became more important, and it turned into a Christmas cake. But that older tradition of slightly rough, slightly streetish kind of holiday that your colleague thought Boxing Day might be was certainly a thing before the 19th century. So that was very much part of the season. But it's really only with the Industrial Revolution, with trains being able to take people home and refrigeration, which means you can get fresh food, that Christmas really turns into what we know. And therefore, Boxing Day begins to just be a little tag on. And the presents, I mean, by the way, the presents were really awful.
Tell us about them.
Either you just got money, which was good, of course. But I've seen advertisements from a department store where there were what were called servants' boxes. And it was ready made up, so you just bought the whole box. And it was fabric, lining, and thread and needle. So basically, the servant could sew her own uniform.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that lovely? I wasn't supposed to tell you. You're going to get one.
Well, that is great, and that gives us something to think about as we go to the break right now. We're talking to Canadian historian and author Judith Flanders about the history of Boxing Day, and we'll continue our discussion in a minute. We'd like to hear from you.
Do you celebrate Boxing Day in some way, shape, or form? Have you lived in a country during Boxing Day? What did you do? Do you think we should celebrate it, and if so, how? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or if you've got your own day after Christmas traditions, Boxing Day or otherwise, let us know about that too. Call 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're picking up our conversation with historian and author Judith Flanders about Boxing Day.
Yeah, it's today, December 26th, the day after Christmas. And if you now or ever have celebrated Boxing Day, you can call and tell us about it. Have you made your own day after Christmas tradition? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org.
Judith Flanders, towards the end of your piece that was published in the New York Times, you make a case that where Boxing Day is now is one thing, but what we ought to be thinking about is sort of the origins of Boxing Day and the idea that giving is something worth considering, and more to the point, something worth actually taking action on, giving whether it's a gift or of your time or money or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. So well, I mean, that seems to be not a bad tradition to have. It had traditionally been part of the teachings of the season, that one is charitable and one looks to others, and it doesn't seem like in these days of really conspicuous consumption, it's a bad idea.
So do you think, how do you think people react to it? I mean, at one point, you know, we talked earlier about the sort of the wailing and gnashing and teeth in America, and you said it's been going on, you know, since 1840. Lending your voice to this discussion had to be something you were thinking about for some time. What was there something that sort of pushed you over the edge and said, you know what, we got to get back to the past here and start thinking about where the origins of this came from?
Well, I think that traditionally, as I say, there had always been a component. But part of it, of course, is if you read 19th century stuff and you realize how desperate the lives of so many were. I mean, people who were in full employment and considered themselves very fortunate. That we have a diary of a housemaid. And she wrote, without any self-pity at all, "I often think what a most delightful pleasure that must be, going home for Christmas, but I've never once had it." And We are so fortunate. We are so fortunate not to live in the 19th century, apart from anything else.
But
it's easy to forget how fortunate we are.
Yeah, and it sounds as though you may be drawing some parallels, and I don't know how directly they are, but that between the 19th century and now, in terms of, you know, the disparity that we hear about between rich and poor, and the time we spend doing good works and that sort of thing. I mean,
it's unavoidable. You can't read this stuff and not draw the parallels.
And so are you optimistic that someone will read your column and they will be, you know, all of a sudden it's going to be just like in a movie somewhere where all of a sudden the veil will lift and they'll start celebrating Boxing Day in the spirit with which it was intended? Or do you think it's going to be a long slog?
I don't think it's an either or. I don't think that, you know, either we get the panning vision of the snowflaked, blissed out family, or Scrooge. I think it's probably somewhere in between. I think we're all somewhere in between. We would all like to do more, and mostly we don't.
So drawing on your work as an historian and taking a look back at the 19th century, and you said a few seconds ago that drawing those parallels between now and then are unavoidable, could outline some of those parallels for us, would you?
Well, the parallels are exactly that, to have a extraordinarily wealthy, very small segment at the top, to have a middle class which is getting, which was then not getting smaller but was very small, is now getting smaller. To have people who are politically disengaged because they don't feel they can make a difference, and so on and so forth. You know, large companies that take advantage of workers. I mean, I can go on forever. The 19th century, as a historian, you sit there and think, we've done this, please don't do this again. But the other day I was talking to another historian and said, do you feel the same? And he said, are you kidding me? I do the decline of the Roman Empire.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like that. So did Boxing Day, you know, back in the day, it was designed at some level to, I guess, help those of a lesser rank, or maybe, you know, provide those of a higher rank with a little less guilt or something.
Well, this is precisely it. What you had in the 19th century was philanthropy or charity that was entirely privately organized. You had no social governmental structure that helped anyone. In Europe, in Canada, for the last 100 years, that has not been the case. We are returning, it would seem, to a situation where help is only provided by private charities.
And so given that, are you optimistic that a reminder of this Boxing Day tradition, the idea of it anyway, would help to maybe temper some of the excesses of the modern
day? No, I'm deeply pessimistic, but I'm deeply pessimistic by nature.
Well,
I don't think, you know, one historian sitting and shrieking is going to make any difference at all. But at the same time, if none of us shriek, nothing happens.
And so do you feel as though you're shrieking alone? Are you a lone voice in the wilderness?
I think certainly, no, I don't think we are. I don't think so at all. I think there are many, many people who feel the same. It's what happens that I don't know. What changes are going to happen? What changes are possible? But I think there's certainly no harm in saying, look, we did this 150 years ago. It was really terrible.
So, you know, taking that historical long view, what lessons can we learn? You've talked about some of the parallels and everything. But are there lessons that people should be taking to heart on this Boxing Day that they should be thinking about doing in terms of changing their lifestyle or changing or taking some sort of action or doing something, it sounds like you're saying, to help the common good.
Well, I think we all know this. I don't think you have to be a historian to point this out, that we live we do better when we live in communities where people help each other. It seems such an obvious thing that I don't think you have to have written a book on Victorian Britain to spot that one. You know, I think that the reminder of what Boxing Day is can't hurt. That we take time out to think of those who are less fortunate can't hurt.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. And Judith Flanders, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us. And thanks for your explanations of Boxing Day. It's been a real education.
Thank you.
That was Canadian historian and author Judith Flanders. She is the author of The Invention of Murder and Inside the Victorian Home. Her opinion piece, Boxing Day is Forgiving, appeared in the New York Times.
And you can go online and share your seasonal holiday traditions, not just Boxing Day, but Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, up through New Year's. Is there something your family has done to reinvent it, to make it personal, or maybe just to work around the fact that not everybody can travel and be together on the holiday? Check us out on our various online incarnations. We're on Facebook, Central Time, on WPR. You can share your stories there. You can also tweet us. We're Central Time WPR. You can always email us, too, by the way, centraltime@WPR.org. I don't know why I have to stop and think so long on that one. It's pretty straightforward.
It's easy to get a hold of us. And if there are other holidays, other reasons to remember those in need during this time of the season, let us know about that too. We'd love to hear from you.